Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual today. With Jim, we start with the good, and over the past many months, Ebola has been the bad martini many, many times, both in terms of its spread in Africa, the cases that we're following here in the United States. So welcome Ebola vaccine, potentially, to the good martini. This from CNN, which Jim reported in the Morning Jolt today. A newly developed vaccine against the deadly Ebola virus is highly effective and could help prevent its spread in the current and future outbreaks, according to the World Health Organization. Trials of the single-dose VSV-EBOV vaccine began in March in Guinea, one of the three West African nations at the center of the outbreak, and have shown such promise that this week it was decided to extend immediate vaccination to all people at risk after close contact with an infected person. The World Health Organization's Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, says this is an extremely promising development, Jim. So after all the concern we had about this potentially spreading more widely in the United States and obviously the scourge of killing thousands in Africa, the chance that this is not only about to stunt this outbreak but future outbreaks is awesome news.
It is. And earlier this week, I had kind of, you know, talked about conservatives need to shake out of their funk. There's way too much depression, gloom. Nothing's going to get better. It's time to buy some land in Belize and abandon the United States. Everything gets worse, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to say we don't have real problems in this country. I'm not going to say there's not real problems in the world. I'm not going to say this administration doesn't make things much worse. William F. Buckley said that despair is a sin. And at some point, you kind of need to just take a look and see what is going right in the world. And this is a giant, great example. And, and one of the nice things is that, look, one, there was a point where we were really in living, if not in fear of Ebola, then deep concern. There was that case down in Dallas and the infection of the hospital workers. We ended up not having the terrible outbreak of Ebola in the United States or really outside of Africa that everybody had feared. The methods they were putting in place there did seem to work in managing to not spread it. But again, kind of a good important lesson here, and you can apply this to the argument about climate change or a whole bunch of other issues. The human mind and human capacity for ingenuity and problem solving is pretty close to infinite. When we put our minds to it, when there's a crisis and we're really motivated, we can do these things. We can overcome great, terrible problems. We overcame largely the measles and polio and everything until people stopped taking vaccines. But anyway, we have, you know, what appears to be an enormous breakthrough in making an Ebola vaccine. And can you imagine what that will mean for so many people's lives in Africa? But not only that, for all of us around the world. Someday, maybe an Ebola vaccine will be as common as some of the vaccines you get as kids now. And imagine just how much fear and terror this had caused really all around the world. And within just a couple of months, our genius scientists managed to synthesize it, analyze it, study it, and come up with a way to stop it. So I started singing, you know, Howard Jones, things are only going to get better. Look, you don't have to be doing the Farrell happy dance or something like that, but just kind of observe that things in this world do get better. And today's news is just a great example to say, hey, you know, things are looking up in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so good. I almost wish we'd made the good martini the last one today so we could go on into the weekend on a high note. But alas, other news prevails for the bad and crazy martinis. Let's move to the bad. Courtesy of the Washington Times, the U.S. intelligence community is bracing for the possibility that former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's private email account contains hundreds of revelations of classified information from spy agencies and is taking steps to contain any damage to national security, according to documents and interviews conducted Thursday. The top lawmakers on the House and Senate Intelligence Committees have been notified in recent days that the extent of classified information on Mrs. Clinton's private email server was likely far more extensive than the four emails publicly acknowledged last week as containing some sensitive spy agency secrets. It includes stuff from the FBI, the CIA, the DNI, and other spy agencies, Jim. So we probably figured when there were four emails with classified information out of just 40 of the 30,000, there would be more. But unfortunately, this goes very deep. And given the horrible security on that server, this could be very, very bad.
Greg, I'll put this question to you. In light of what we know now, should Hillary Clinton have a security clearance?
It's a good question. Probably not. But
for any other person, no, you mishandle this much classified information, your security clearance will be yanked immediately. Now, she's running to be commander in chief. How do you have a president who you know, would not qualify for a security clearance because of their, you know, mishandling of classified information and letting it get exposed and not keeping it safe on a massive scale? I think this indicates just the scale of the problem. It's on the one hand, you got to think, you know, God, how many, you know, covert operations, how many important investigations, how many sensitive negotiations, how many things have gone wrong because of the possibility this information has been released by anyone who could hack into Hillary's emails? On the other hand, for those of us who want to say, look, she's not qualified to be commander-in-chief, she's not going to be a good president, she never thinks the rules apply to her, here is a very clear example of this, and I think the consequences of this look pretty obvious for even everybody except the most diehard Hillary defender to acknowledge.
Exactly, and I think we're getting another email dump. It's either today or next week. It's sometime soon, so we'll see just how much out of the emails she's graciously allowed us to see from her time as Secretary of State also contains more sensitive information. But Jim, the good news is, of course, that her successor has a far greater respect for the rules and the Constitution of the United States than Hillary Clinton. Welcome to the Crazy Martini. John Kerry testifying multiple times this week on Capitol Hill about why Congress ought to approve the Iran nuclear deal. He did not get a good reception really from either party, mostly Republicans, of course, but he testified before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and rather than spending all of his time talking about the contents of the deal, Wisconsin Republican Congressman Reid Ribble asked a really important question, and Kerry gave an unbelievable answer.
For 228 years, the Constitution provided a way out of that mess by allowing treaties to be with the advice and consent of 67 U.S. senators. Why is this not considered a treaty?
Well, Congressman, I spent quite a few years trying to get a lot of treaties through the United States Senate, and frankly, it's become physically impossible. That's why. Because you can't pass a treaty anymore. And it's become impossible to, schedule. It's become impossible to pass.
Jim, we'd love to follow the Constitution, but it's really hard.
Greg, treaty process is hard. Getting enough votes to ratify it is physically impossible. That's very much a Joe Biden, literally. No, because you get, 50-some guys together and they raise their hands. Yes, that is physically possible. You just find it nearly impossible because you're an extraordinarily unappealing, unpersuasive Secretary of State. And because the deal is really terrible. If you had a good deal, you really wouldn't find it that hard. It's very revealing to Kerry that he felt, comfortable saying that, like, look, the problem's with you people, all right? You people are impossible to work with, so we're just working around it. And two, kind of in that answer is he didn't really say, well, I'll bother this shouldn't be a treaty. Like, he'd openly say it should have been a treaty, but we're just not. So on the one hand, it's kind of what we expected from John Kerry. I guess we should give him a molecule of credit for honesty, Greg. On the other hand, when I hear that, I just want to, he's like, it's hard, and I was going to go to the Tachi station to pick up some power converters. Oh, it's just this wine, Ron, why don't you sign the treaty? Is that how the Geneva meetings went? We're in the very best of hands, aren't we, Greg?
The administration had it was a bogus answer. It was a better answer before about, not every international deal is officially a treaty.
Yeah, it's a deal. It's not a treaty.
Exactly. I mean, it was bogus, but at least it was an argument rather than, we just don't have the votes, so we're just not going to do what the Constitution says. Pretty sure he took an oath to the contrary of that.
Yeah. I think you have to uphold, defend, and protect the Constitution unless it's hard. Then you're allowed to ignore it. So,
Jim, on that bizarre note, have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone. Join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.